y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s-loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of murder, domestic violence, assault, drug and alcohol abuse, child death, and police brutality. Listener discretion is advised.
I want to take this opportunity to say, before we get into the overview, we have tried very, very hard to be as delicate and respectful of the pronunciation of names. However, there are a lot of different things that are specific to different tribes and reservations, different pronunciations, different things that we just don't really know about. So if there's anybody out there that can shed some light on things that we have either mispronounced, maybe don't understand fully, we would love that. But just remember that we are two girls from the South, and hopefully we don't ruin this.
Yeah.
And that's, yes.
Everything we pronounce comes out as country bumpkin. So
imagine a banjo, and that's us talking. So
exactly.
That's that. Kimberly Iron, 21. Faith Lindsay, 17. Sabrina Rosette, 33. Cecilia Barber Fenona, 59. Jermaine Liz Morigo, 23. Olivia Lone Bear, 32. Faith Hedgepath, 19. Cheryl Lynn Jaquo, 43. Monica L. Bercier Wicker, 42. All of these Indigenous women were either murdered or disappeared under suspicious circumstances. Some have been solved. Most of them have not. These are just a few names out of thousands of missing and murdered Indigenous women in the nation. Many aren't reported, and most aren't even investigated properly, leaving loved ones feeling lost, filled with questions, and feeling as though they can't trust any law enforcement. There's a common saying in Native American communities, when an Indigenous woman goes missing, she goes missing twice. First, her body vanishes, then her story. Why are so many Native American and Alaskan Native women going missing and being murdered? And why does it seem like people don't care?
Hey, you guys, welcome to Killer Queens. If you've never been here before, we want to give you just a little information about how the show is set up and what it's meant to accomplish. If you have been here before, welcome back. You can just use that handy skip ahead feature here if you want to.
We want to give a message to friends and family of the victims. We know that there may be someone involved in the case who might listen one day, and we want you to know that our intention is to only bring awareness to this case. And while we do use personal stories in some instances and our own humor in order to tell the story in a way that listeners can relate, we have the utmost respect for victims and their families.
We created Killer Queens to be a place where we can have open discussions about cases just like you would with friends. We are not investigators. We use information that is available to the public, such as documentaries, case files, and media coverage. Using this information, we intend to tell the story of what happened in each case that we cover. Now, will you agree with our interpretations or conclusions of each case? Well, heck no.
Mm-mm. We each approach cases from different perspectives, life experiences, and beliefs that we already have in place. And sometimes these differences are slight, yet they can be wide enough to cause divide and upset some of those listening. We do our best to present the facts as we find them in our research, but we do bring our own perspectives to the case. We understand that you will too. We want you to know that this is a safe space to discuss differences and opinions in a civilized manner. Our style may not be your personal preference, and if that's the case, we know you'll be able to find one of the many other shows out there to tell the story the way you want to hear it. We can be grown-ups about it if you can.
Now, if we are your cup of tea and you want even more KQ, you can join our Patreon and get access to our entire catalog of episodes ad-free and access to bonus episodes too. And I'll give you just a little hint if you're an ad skipper, but you still want the deals that we have from our sponsors each week, you can scroll down to the show notes and see what coupons we have available for you right down there.
But you didn't hear it from us.
That's a pro tip, but I'll deny ever sharing it.
Right. So all that being said, let's get into the story.
All right, you guys. So we've had a lot of requests for an episode on the missing and murdered Indigenous women epidemic. Because of the limited amount of information that typically is out there on each case, this is not going to be just a one case episode. There's going to be a few that we talk about. And of course, we want to cover more of these. There are, unfortunately, a lot more to cover. So again, if you have any information, always use our case submission form on our website. So killerqueenspodcast.com. And then there's a link for case submission. And then that way we can make sure that it gets added to our list. Any documents that you have, any articles, anything that you have where we can get information is super, super helpful. So just to put that out there. So in 2016, 5,712 cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women were reported in the United States. Only 116 of those reports were logged into the Department of Justice database. At the time this data was collected, it was widely believed that this number was below the actual number of cases. But now, 7 years later, there's no doubt that the number of missing and murdered Indigenous women has increased significantly. During this same study, research was conducted to determine what the leading causes of death were for American Indian and Alaskan Native women and girls. You guys, the third leading cause of death was not a natural cause. It was murder. Let me put that into perspective, because if you look at causes of death for women in the United States in general, you have heart disease, cancer, chronic lower respiratory diseases is number three. Stroke is below that. But we've got one, two, three is murder. That's disturbing. Yeah.
It's outrageous. Yes.
This 2016 study was conducted by the Urban Indian Health Institute. The data was collected in 71 cities across 29 states. There were 506 cases of missing and murdered American Indian and Alaska Native females identified in this study. The ages of the victims varied greatly from less than a year old all the way up to an 83-year-old woman. Of the 506 cases, 128 were found to be cases of missing Indigenous women. 280 were of murdered Indigenous women, with 98 having a status as unknown. Even more frightening is the fact that more than 95% of these cases were never covered by national or international media. And the perception within most of law enforcement and... enforcement?
That ain't a word.
Not a word.
No.
I think we should have a KQ dictionary of just words that we've made up.
Yeah.
Toin cost would be in there.
Yes. Handcuffs.
Thog heaving.
Enfortment.
Enfortment.
Myrtled.
Yes. Yes. My. Okay. Sorry. That's not a word. Even more frightening is the fact that more than 95% of these cases were never covered by national or international media, and the perception within most of law enforcement and news media coverage relied heavily on the causes of these women being murdered and going missing. And so the perception is that if it's a result of sex work, if it's a result of domestic violence, why cover it, right? If it has anything to do with addiction or around addiction or the family has addiction, you know, any of that.
What, they deserved it. Is that what we're...
Right.
Is that what we're thinking?
Feels that way.
You put yourself in harm's way, so I just...
Yeah. And once they conducted this study, so we have this widely... horrific perception anyway. Well, if it has to do with this, then whatever. But they do the study and they find out that this is untrue. But even if it was,
Right.
Like, these are people. Overall, the media coverage, law enforcement response, and investigation, as well as the ultimate lack of prosecution for the responsible individuals, is grossly lacking. The study surmised that the tribal nations that these girls and women belong to must have the ability to advocate for their people, similarly to when a country's citizen is killed outside their nation. It's not very often that a tribal nation is given the respect and ability to advocate for their missing or murdered loved ones. All of these facts and data support the obvious that American Indian and Alaskan Native Indigenous women and girls are going missing and being murdered at a frightening rate, leaving their families and tribes with no answers and little support from law enforcement in most cases. So in the early 1800s, the Bureau of Indian Affairs was formed to bridge the gap between the United States and the tribes. They have an Office of Justice Services, which holds jurisdiction over crimes committed within Indian country. Indian country is recognized as formal and informal reservations, dependent Indian communities, or where no congressional grant of jurisdiction to state government over the Indian country involved exist. So they deal with major federal crimes and state crimes with the authority to enforce laws. They have a specific unit within them that is dedicated to missing and murdered Indigenous people. Though much of the data regarding missing and murdered Indigenous women is considered to be understated due to the fact that many of these females are misidentified in their reports as Hispanic or Asian, which, like, why, if we know this, why are we, the BIA, it estimates that there are about 4,200 cases of these missing and murdered Indigenous people that have gone unsolved, which is absolutely unacceptable.
I have a question. Maybe it could be also classified as a theory. I don't know. Are they misidentifying these women as a different race altogether because it, to take the heat off of, we need to do something about these missing and murdered Indigenous women? Like, are we saying, well, see, it's not so bad because it's not just the American Indian and Alaskan Native, you know, like, is that what it is? I don't know, because
it's very odd. Like,
well, and we'll get into it, but we talked to a son of a bitch who is an under sheriff. I don't know, Torella, do you know anything about under sheriffs?
Well, the thing, like, I know you can be under sheriff and you can be over sheriff, but can you ever just be sheriff?
Oh yeah, I think you can in Europe. I don't know. But this guy, who we'll get into a little bit later, he maintains, even as recent as 2022, that this is not an epidemic. This is not something that anybody needs to worry about. It's not real. So is this to perpetuate that, is what I'm asking?
I mean, you know, that's a good point, because it's not, I would not think, I guess, I don't know how to, I wonder how often this happens with other ethnicities.
Sure.
How often are we misidentifying them? Because, like you are pointing out, I feel like it's going to be a higher rate with Indigenous people, because a big part of why these studies are, or why the stats are incorrect, is because of that. So it's that's happening at an alarming rate as well, it would seem. Yeah,
absolutely.
And if you've got law enforcement who are saying, you got, this is in your head, this isn't no, there's plenty of other people that go missing.
Gas lighting.
So
I was appalled. And like I said, we're going to rip him a new one a little bit later.
Yeah.
But just wanted to bring that up as, you know, a possible reason. I don't know.
Yep. Between the years of 1990 and 2016, specifically in the state of Minnesota, the homicide numbers for Native women, you guys, The homicide numbers for Native women was 7 times the amount of white women. And then one would think that that is because there is a larger number of Native women, right? No.
Opposite.
They only made up 1% of Minnesota's population during those years. So 1% of the population were 7 times more likely to be murdered. And they made up 8% of all murdered women and girls in that state. Additionally, the missing and murdered Indigenous women in Minnesota found that somewhere between 27 to 54 Native American women went missing each month between those years.
When I heard the numbers, I thought there's no way it could be. I would think per year is too many. Don't get me wrong. It's too many per month. Per month. I'm appalled. And the fact that nobody hears about this. This many people goes missing or are murdered a month and you don't hear about it?
Right. Right.
Riddle me that. That does not make any sense.
Mm-mm. I was reading a study and I can share a link to it because it was pretty interesting. It's like 50 something pages. I haven't read the whole thing, but what they were doing was actually a study on the missing and murdered Indigenous women movement, specifically looking at social media and TikTok. And so one of the accounts that they were looking at in some of her videos, and I apologize, I cannot remember the name of it right now, but I will share it. She said that when she will post, do a video on any of these people, she was like, what keeps me doing this and like going is I will get comments every time of people being like, I live in that city and I've never heard of this. I live 1 hour away from there. I've never heard this. Oh, that happened 2 weeks ago. I've never heard about that. Like,
it's outrageous.
It's absolutely outrageous. And these numbers are shocking, but they're not alone. Many other states, including Alaska, Montana, and Washington State, share the same statistics. We've got some listeners who live in South Dakota who have been keeping up with this, and there are Indigenous women going missing and being found murdered at a crazy alarming rate. And it's these kind of numbers, 27 to 54 people in a very short amount of time. It's very scary. And with these high numbers, it's difficult to compile a significant amount of information on all the cases, like we said. And again, they're not being investigated appropriately by law enforcement. They've not been given the media coverage that they deserve. But the true crime community is set on bringing as much attention to these individuals as possible, whether it be telling an entire story or simply making sure that these names are heard. And I just want to say something like to you guys watching, listening, if you're watching, listening, thank you. I have talked to some other podcasters who are running into the same problem when we're trying to cover more of these cases. And it's just, there's very little information out there. However, when you look at your numbers, because we can go in and see how many people listen to each episode, how far people on average are getting into an episode, like the percentage and stuff. And many other podcasters who have covered a case like this find that the number of listeners is lower. So it's a full circle thing. So if you are listening and inclined to skip it, please don't. We've got to make a change in every facet. You know, it has to be everywhere. We do a missing persons post every week on our Instagram stories. Please share those when you see them. They're of all types of people. But, you know, the more eyes that get on something like that, maybe somebody knows something. I mean, that's the thing. So it's sad all the way around.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're going to talk about a little girl named Henny Scott now. She lived in Bighorn County, Montana, on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. She was 14 years old, 14, when she disappeared in late December of 2018. She called her mom from a residence to let her mom know where she was. Her mother recognized the name on the caller ID as a residence that was known as a party spot and that adults weren't there. And she told Henny that it was time for her to come home. And unfortunately, Henny never made it home. Her family was immediately worried, especially as rumors began circulating that there had been older men at the party that night who were known to target young girls. It's disgusting. I don't understand it. Like, nobody deserves to be targeted.
No.
At all. Leave the kids alone. Leave them alone. Leave everybody alone. But you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, leave them alone.
Well, and this is one of those things that's like, it's also very frustrating because it's like when we've talked about other cases and people are like, oh yeah, they were last seen near an area, a known dumping ground for bodies or whatever. Like, if you don't know that that's what people are using that for, then you don't know. But once you do know, it's been exposed.
Yeah.
So
you have the information.
Why is it still being used for that? Why is this still a house where older men can target young girls? If we know that, bust it up, break it up, get in there, do something, arrest these men. Like, it's just like, oh, well, that's just where that happens.
Right. Henny was the youngest one at the residence that night, and when Henny's stepfather went to the residence to look for her, he was told that she'd walked off that night. Now, knowing that her daughter would have never walked off alone, her mother, Paula, filed a missing persons report at the Northern Cheyenne Law Enforcement Center, and she immediately knew that Henny's disappearance would not be taken seriously. Law enforcement asked if Henny had a new boyfriend or might be out partying.
Like, okay. Henny was at this house. She called her mom from that house to say, hey, I just want you to know where I am. So as a law enforcement officer, wouldn't you think, well, then she probably didn't just walk off. She called to let her mom know where she was at this house.
Yeah.
So then she's just going
to
walk away.
She didn't have to do that.
Exactly. Right. She's just going to walk away and not tell anybody. And furthermore, she's 14 and she's not allowed to.
I was literally about to say that. I don't know how many times we have said that. Like, just because a kid can run away, kids can run away. They can do that. Doesn't mean they're allowed to. And to be like, well, they probably just walked off. Probably just ran away. It doesn't matter. No, get out there and find them.
It's literally your job. It's literally your job. Like, I'm not asking you to go bake a cake. That's outside of your job description. I'm asking you to look for a child that's missing. A child.
Mm-hmm. Law enforcement, they didn't do anything. They provided no assistance. So Henny's friends and family began searching for the 14-year-old. 20 days later, on December 27th, a group found the body of Henny Scott. She was not far from the residence where she called her mother from. She was not even 150 yards away from it. She was wearing a pair of sweatpants and a t-shirt was thrown beside her. Her mother said that neither of those articles of clothing belonged to her. An autopsy performed by the Montana chief medical examiner concluded that Henny's cause of death was hypothermia and it was accidental, that absolutely no foul play was involved. It was also determined that Henny had alcohol in her system, which contributed to her death. The medical examiner claimed that nothing indicated any trauma. Henny's parents said that when they saw their daughter's body, she appeared to have had a broken nose, she had bruises, scratches, and small burns on her skin. There was no investigation into her death past the medical examiner's ruling. Henny's family even had her body exhumed, which is against the tribe's customs, to look for evidence of foul play, and none was found. Henny's family and friends continue to believe that she was assaulted and the victim of homicide. Montana is one of the most dangerous areas for Indigenous women, specifically in the areas of the Crow Indian Reservation and the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. Similarly to other reservations across the country, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which is the BIA, and the FBI have jurisdiction. So the BIA is intended to show up on scenes initially, and then the FBI is going to be called. But the BIA cannot exercise law enforcement over non-Indians on the tribal land. So to find out exactly who has jurisdiction, law enforcement would need to know who the victim was, whether they were Indian or not, who the perpetrator was, whether that person is Indian or not, and where the crime took place. Is this Indian land or not? And this leaves a high occurrence of jurisdiction denying that they're responsible for investigating these crimes. So the land at this point is almost lawless.
I mean. Now we're going to talk about Kaysera. So on August 24th, 2019, 18-year-old Kaysera Stops Pretty Places left her home on the Crow Reservation not far from Hardin, Montana, to celebrate her recent birthday with friends. She and two of her friends planned to spend the night partying. Kaysera had not had an easy childhood, unfortunately. She grew up in a home with parents who heavily abused alcohol and drugs. And she became kind of the protector of her siblings. And everybody said she loved them fiercely. She was loyal and giving and someone that her siblings and friends looked up to. On that August night, okay, and you guys, it's August, like she disappeared.
And you'll see a lot of when these missing or murdered, I would say for the sake of what I'm about to say, for the murdered Indigenous women, if it happens in a place that has very cold temperatures and it happens during the winter time, the cause of death that you will see most often, hypothermia.
Yes. It is almost always hypothermia and accidental. Yeah. But like in the situation with Henny, her body was found. You could see the door to the house that she had been at. She could have easily walked there.
And she is an able-bodied 14-year-old girl. But also, why is she in sweatpants? And as far as I could tell, she's topless because the shirt is lying next to her body, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not normal.
Well, the medical examiner did say, and I've heard this before, in the Lisk case, one of the victims was found just kind of out in the elements. And so they said that she had succumbed to the elements, but she was found naked. And I remember hearing it then that they said, it's kind of this like reaction that your body has for whatever reason, like you will take clothes off when hypothermia is setting in. But again, she was it's not like she was in the middle of nowhere where there was no shelter that she could have gotten to. She was so close to it that it was like, it's not like it was so far in the distance that that house was a tiny, you know, blip in the distance. It was right there.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, I mean, if you have followed, we actually did a case. It was a couple of different cases in one episode, but we know that law, and this is different maybe than, but sometimes it happens where people of color or Indigenous people are taken by either law enforcement or somebody else and dropped off in a location where it's a very remote location. They have no way of getting back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, but this is not that.
It's not that. It's just, it's very strange. Like, because I've been trying to like I Googled, like, how long does hypothermia take to set in? And like, you can begin to experience symptoms of hypothermia, according to the Goog machine here, within, you know, minutes and whatever. But it says it would take, like, you can die from hypothermia within an hour. But again, it would have only taken her a few minutes to walk back.
Right.
So why was she out there?
Unless you have been incapacitated in some way physically where she could not get up to.
Right.
Right.
Right. Exactly. But we're not willing to look at that possibility. She walked off and she died.
And it took 20 days to find her?
Yes. And again, and we're going to see this again in other cases too. It's from here to right over there. And there were people out there looking. And they won't explore the possibility that somebody could have dumped, like brought the body back there. It's just not possible. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
No.
So now this is August and Kaysera disappeared. She was reported missing to the Bighorn County Sheriff's Office, but no formal report appeared to have been taken. Her aunt and the rest of Kaysera's family and friends waited for any news from law enforcement, despite the fact that there were no alerts sent out regarding her disappearance. There were no posters. There was no media coverage, nothing. So 5 days after Kaysera disappeared, her aunt received a message from a coworker telling her that a jogger had just found the body of a deceased female in the backyard of a house in Hardin, just off the reservation. The house was on the corner of Mitchell Avenue, one of the main streets in the city. Kaysera's family received no communication from law enforcement reporting that a body matching her description had been found. Probably because they forgot the report in the first place, but...
Right.
To hear this from a... hey, there's been a body found. And not the police when you've reported this, like... So the body was transported to the state crime lab in Billings as a Jane Doe, and she was not identified until September 11th by using dental records. And the body belonged to 18-year-old Kaysera Stops Pretty Places. Due to significant decomposition, no cause of death was able to be determined. Her body was returned to Hardin, where the Bighorn County coroner cremated her. Despite not having any approval from the family to do so. They didn't ask for that, and they weren't asked if they wanted that.
Well, and there is a three-part docuseries on Showtime, and it is called
Murders.
Yes. And in that docuseries, they said that it was against their tribal practices, religion. I'm forgetting the exact way that they put it, but that's something that you wouldn't be able to go through to the next afterlife, maybe, or something, if you were cremated. So there was absolutely no way that they would have.
They never would have approved
or signed off on it. Absolutely not. No,
like never would have. And it just
and what is happened. What does that tell you? Like it makes you wonder: are they trying to cover something up or hide something?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And again, this is on a busy street in this area. On a busy street, they found her,
mm-hmm.
and it took however long to where she was so badly decomposed that they couldn't. Every time, and I don't think that I'm alone here, but I feel like I'm taking crazy pills because none of this makes sense. But the police are, I feel like, or law enforcement, whoever is giving this information out, they're gaslighting everybody, being like, well, if you really think about it, it does make sense. And also, don't ask any more questions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's actually none of your business.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Kaysera's family could not understand what had happened, why they couldn't get law enforcement to speak with them. When they finally did, they were told that law enforcement believed that Kaysera just probably walked into the backyard and died, and then she was just laying there for 5 days. Okay, but why does she die? You don't just lay down and say, I'm done, and then die. It's not like a movie. You don't do the like, okay, I'm dead. Like, that's...
Right.
That's not how it works. So what do you mean she just laid down and then died?
And how is that a logical explanation? Like, how does somebody with a straight face say, well, they probably just went out there and died. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And a completely healthy 18-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm. Probably just laid down and died.
Like, okay. All right.
What does that even mean? It just doesn't...
What a slap in the face to the family.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And she was found with her phone. Like, her phone was with her. And they didn't mm-hmm. use anything to identify her. They waited for the dental records.
The dental...
They did, like... Some,
again.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No.
What does this tell you? Because the police are going to say, this is not a problem. We do not have an issue with this. And we're doing everything that we can to, you know, we've dotted our T's and crossed our I's here. We've done everything. What this says to me is they do not care.
No.
And there are facts to prove that. It's not just a, well, you know, I don't know, but maybe they don't care. No, tell me I'm wrong.
Right. Yeah. Because if this is incorrect, then give me one thing that shows that it's incorrect.
Yeah. I've got examples saying that it is correct, but if you've got examples saying it's incorrect, then I'll take them.
Exactly. Like, I would welcome that.
Uh-huh. We want to be wrong, right?
Yeah. But it's like, and the families would welcome that.
Yeah.
Some of Kaysera's family felt that a recent social media post that she'd made could have affected the response to her death. A few weeks prior, during the annual Crow Fair celebration, Kaysera filmed as a fight broke out, which ended in the police being called. And the responding officers began beating one of the boys who had instigated the fight. This boy was Kaysera's brother. Police reports said the young man was acting aggressive and resisting arrest, and one of the officers accused of beating him was with the Bighorn County Sheriff's Office. Because, I mean, again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything, but she's got video that incriminates police officers. I'm not saying they killed her, but she's now passed away. And they have her body cremated, knowing full well that that's completely against any of her family's beliefs. Like, they would know that. I might not know that until hearing this, but they know that.
And even if they didn't, let's say they didn't. I don't know if I believe it, but let's say they didn't. It's not common practice to just decide that for a family. Mm-hmm. You have to get someone to, you have to check and sign off on it. And
exactly. Because she had been identified. It wasn't like she'd never been identified and they didn't have somebody to contact. Yeah.
Right.
So the medical examiner could not rule in foul play, but he said he couldn't rule it out either. So he's willing to concede that something could have happened. He did say that there were several options at play as to what had caused Kaysera's death, and some of those fell under the manner of homicide. He also said her toxicology report showed a high blood alcohol content of 0.149. And according to the Goog machine, a blood alcohol content of 0.12 and over is considered high risk for problems such as blurred vision, slurred speech, difficulty with coordination, balance, and decision making. That's not death.
Yeah, how did we get to death from that? I think that the majority of the population has been that drunk or more drunk. And the odds of you, and you can't blame it on hypothermia. It was in August.
Right. Yeah. And the next level up that's on this little chart here is 0.17 to 0.20, falling down, impaired reactions, possible vomiting. So, you know.
Again, not death.
Right. But she wasn't even to that level. So say she was walking outside in the yard. She tripped and fell. And she began to vomit and she aspirated. There's no evidence of that. Her blood, and I'm not saying that you could never vomit lower than 0.17. I understand that there are varying, you know, it affects people differently and all that kind of stuff.
Or let's you could even take out the vomiting. I mean, it's a possibility because drinking in excess can, that's definitely one of the symptoms, whatever. But let's say she fell down and hit her head on something. But they have no...
There's no evidence of that. Yeah, they don't have anything that says, because at the blood alcohol content that she was at, and I get that she was 18 and, you know, maybe she was smaller and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, I don't know exactly what... because then it was different for different weights and like all that kind of stuff. Your body metabolizes it differently. But the standard for that blood alcohol content is slurred speech, difficulty with coordination. Yeah. It's not life and death situations here. And like you said, can you fall down and hit your head? Yes, of course you can. But if she'd hit her head hard enough to die, even if your body is decomposed for 5 days, maybe you don't have the soft tissues anymore, but you should have, you would think you'd have something there. I mean, I don't know, but
it's just a lot of, well, we think it was, she just died. We think it was hypothermia. And then what we see in a lot of I say a lot of these cases, but the cases where we hear anything at all about it, a lot of the ones that I have heard about are, they say, well, she had a very, very high alcohol content, high blood alcohol content. So they're saying, if what I'm hearing is that they're saying that that has contributed to the death in some way.
Right.
They don't say how.
Right.
They don't say why.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like giving you enough to satiate, you know, like pacify you. Okay, well, that's all you need to know. So, and it resulted in their death. How, though?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, because she walked outside and laid down and died. I feel like you didn't hear them say that.
Now, listen, this is, hopefully this makes sense. I had a cat once, Regis Philbin, greatest cat I've ever had in my entire life. I don't know what was wrong with him. I have no idea. But one day he went out into the yard, because that's what cats do. They find a spot and then they lay down and die. Mm-hmm. They don't want to bother anybody else with it, right? All right. That has happened. He went out and laid down and died. But guess what? He had something else wrong with him. There was something else wrong.
Right. Yeah.
It wasn't just that he decided to just, you know, end and go be with the Lord. I don't know if all cats go to heaven. I know dogs do, but it does not 18 out hanging out with friends
and no major health issues that we know of. I mean,
and the family would have said that because again, like you said, they would have, I don't think that they would have withheld information like that if they thought, oh my gosh, she's had a horrible liver disease or something.
Right.
They would not withhold that because they are not out to just get law enforcement.
Right.
They want answers.
Yes, because this is their loved one. Yes.
I'm getting heated, man.
I know it. A report was released 2 years following Kaysera's death with witness statements from the friends that she'd been with the night that she disappeared. So she'd been with friends drinking at a house in Hardin, and an argument between the three girls and the man who'd provided them with alcohol escalated, and they were outside around like 3 a.m. There were two different accounts of what initially frightened the group, either a car alarm or a passing police cruiser, which caused them to flee in different directions. And this was the last report of anyone seeing Kaysera alive. Her case is said to be active. However, no further information has been released to the public in almost 2 years. And again, if she did run away in a different direction from other people, she was on the busiest street in the entire town. She could have flagged somebody down. I mean, okay, so she ran in a direction away from maybe the other people. They all went in different directions, but that didn't kill them.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
It just doesn't make sense. Like,
no, absolutely.
Again, like you said, they'll give you this much and say, well, but she ran out there.
Okay, you're still not connecting all the dots for me. Like,
that tells me nothing.
Exactly. In fact, it gives me more questions than answers. Mm-hmm. Like, right. But you don't get to know that. And I wonder too, because this is what happens. It happens sometimes. I feel like it has happened. I'll say that. I'm not trying to come for all law enforcement, because I think some people do their jobs well, and some people go above and beyond. Some people are in it for the right reasons. However, sometimes we have seen in cases where law enforcement wants to keep a case active. So they, instead of saying, oh, it's a cold case, because then at that point, the family can say, I want all of the files.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take it on myself, but they don't want to do that.
Yeah. If it's active, they can keep it under wraps.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And there exists a distrust of white men by Native Americans, and that's based on an incredibly violent history. Colonizers came into the land that belonged to Native Americans, taking whatever they wanted. There is a saying that refers to the tribe in Northern Cheyenne, quote, a nation is not defeated until the heart of its women are on the ground. That's very sad. They believed that when the colonizers saw the position that the Native women held, the respect that they had from their tribes, they did everything that they could to break that. They wanted to completely kill their spirits. And the history of distrust has led young Indigenous women to lose sight of their value, believing that they're bound to have a short life, which will end in murder, assault, or abduction. And this is coming from some of the women who were, and other people, but in this, they talked about this in Murder in Bighorn, and just like, it's just so sad that if the goal was to break their spirits, they've done a good job. And to do that to other human beings, I just don't understand it. And one of the women in the documentary said, a lot of these young women have this mindset that I'm probably going to die young anyway. So I'm going to enjoy the time that I have. And I'm not going to, like, I'm just going to do whatever I want, even if I might be in a dangerous situation. Because, like, what's the point?
Right. I mean, I could be way off here because sometimes I think I know, but I have no idea, like diary style, but it's a pattern of systemic oppression, and it's rippled out. Everybody is affected by it. It happened for so many years, for so long, and now look at where we are.
Right.
And I am so ashamed. And I will say this, and I completely understand now. I didn't know at the time. I have, because I think if you've listened or watched, I love to bust out in song. I don't know why, because I don't even like musicals, but I like to break out into song. It doesn't make sense to me, and you know, I've come to terms with it. Hopefully you do too. But I've sung songs from the Disney movie Pocahontas, and we had gotten some feedback on that, like, hey guys, this is not, it's insensitive. And I was like, oh, it's just, you know, I love that soundtrack. And after learning more about the way that white colonizers affected indigenous people, not women, but, you know, now I get it. And so it's like the more you know, but yeah. I just want to apologize.
Well, Pocahontas romanticized that.
The movie, you know. Pocahontas, absolutely, yes.
Yes. Yes. And as little girls, we just thought, oh, they met love and story. Fell in love.
Yes. Again, it's like the more you know, and I always want to learn, and I always want to do better, so I'll just say that, because it's incredibly eye-opening in the saddest and most infuriating way possible, mm-hmm. because this should not be the world that anybody has to live in, and the fact that it is the world, it feels like, is preying on these women. And I don't think it's limited to indigenous women, but this is what we're talking about right now. And it is an epidemic that is absolutely outrageous. And I'm so mad about it. But it's just, I don't know. I'm mad about it. And I understand more now. I'll never be able to understand completely, but I do understand a little bit more.
It's disappointing. I keep losing my shirt there. Sorry. It's disappointing because, you know, in school we learned about some things, you know.
Sure.
And what we did learn was awful, but I didn't realize the extent that the abuse and torture and like all of these things of indigenous people, the extent of it, because I was watching 1923.
Oh, yes.
And one of the storylines in that show or season, or I don't know, because I guess each year is a different whatever, but you know what I'm saying. One of the storylines in that is a young Native American woman who is in a boarding school. I did not know that that's how that worked. So they would take the women and they would put them into these boarding schools. And literally, if they spoke their native language, they would beat the shit out of them. They would put them in the hole that they would call it. Many of them died. Many of them died. And there, of course, was never any repercussions for anything like that. Sometimes they'd be beaten to death just for saying a word that was there in their native language or singing a song in their native language. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
They literally wanted to beat their heritage out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they took that too far and it was a whoopsie daisy. There's plenty more.
Right. They're not real they feel, or it, no, I'm going to say it. They feel, felt like it, they're not real people. So who cares? Mm-mm. And I think that where I did not realize it's, again, it's like the more, you know, like I know now, or I am understanding more now, but when we learned about it in school, or if I saw it in a movie or something like that, I thought, man, that it was awful for them back then.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know how far this has gone and how it is still happening. I just didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's appalling. It's, ugh.
Hey, you guys. It's us again.
Yay, it's us.
We threw you for a loop on this one. So we know that a lot of you have been asking, like, WTF, where are episodes 1 through 44? And guess what? Now you can have them.
So let's just remember, though, we need you to take a little caution here. We didn't know exactly what we were doing back then. And we started this podcast as just a fun thing to do as sisters. We had no idea that it would grow into this super awesome club with you guys. So what we're saying is the audio wasn't super amazing, but the content is 100% us. Just being us and talking about some true crime with 90s flair.
Okay, so here are the details. You'll be able to access our what we're calling OG episodes in your favorite podcast app through a private and custom RSS feed link. So to grab that, head over to killerqueens.link/OG and snag episodes 1 through 44 today. That's killerqueens.link/OG.
Now we're going to talk about Selena Not Afraid. She was 16 years old and she was dropped off by her mother at a New Year's Eve party in Billings on December 31st, 2019. A member of the Crow tribe, Selena lived on the reservation and loved playing volleyball, basketball, and horseback riding. She was creative and she loved to sew and make beaded jewelry. The party she was at was on Montana Avenue, and it was serving alcohol to several underage attendees. Selena called her aunt the next morning around 9 a.m. to tell her Happy New Year. Everything seemed normal to her aunt. She didn't notice anything different in her niece's voice. She did notice that there was music in the background and she could hear men's voices. And this caused her to be concerned. And she told Selena, okay, it's time to come home. Selena told her she was about to call her mother to pick her up, and she did. Her mom arrived at the home around 45 minutes after the phone call, but her daughter was nowhere to be found. Selena, along with five others who had been at the house, had gotten into a van and began driving towards Hardin. A Snapchat video was posted showing Selena and the others in the vehicle, some of them still drinking. Around 2 p.m., the van started to have mechanical problems, and the driver pulled into a rest stop along eastbound Interstate 90 to fix the vehicle. Reportedly, Selena and one of the other girls walked off from the van. The other girl said that she sat down on a curb and Selena tried to get her to climb over a nearby fence and walk through a field towards the old highway. The girl said no, and Selena climbed over the fence and then she just disappears. The van eventually left both girls at the rest stop. Selena's family arrived at the rest stop to pick her up, but they could not find her. Unlike most reports of missing Indigenous girls in the area, a police report police response was immediate. The BIA and the Bighorn County Sheriff's Department arrived on scene. They brought search dogs, drones, people on ATVs. They had people on horseback. They searched the area for Selena, but nothing was found. Selena's grandmother saw the fence that she was reported to have climbed over. It was a barbed wire fence. And her mom was like, her grandmother was like, that fence is too high. She would have never climbed over that. She just wouldn't have done it.
It also just seems really strange, too, that she had just called her mom and said, hey, can you pick me up? And her mom was like, yes, I'm on the way. And then she got in a van and left.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking. And also, where was this van headed? Because
right,
if they were taking them with them, it wasn't like, oh, my mom's going to meet me at this rest stop. Can you drop me off?
They broke down there.
And then they were like, well, we got everything. We got it fixed enough and see you guys later.
It doesn't make sense.
None of this makes any sense. On January 20th, Selena's body was found during a grid search. Her body was lying in the open, and this is just 3/4 of a mile away from the rest stop. It was in an area that had supposedly been searched multiple times. Her body had been there for 20 days, but was still fully intact with no signs of animal scavenging. And I don't know. Gosh, I'm not a scientist. I don't know if anybody knew that. I wouldn't know what kind of animals. I mean, I could think of some, maybe the coyotes and stuff like that. But there it's like mountain lions and coyotes. And, you know, it would not be uncommon for... It's more uncommon that there was no scavenging found.
Right.
Her autopsy was performed, which revealed no alcohol in her system. That's almost shocking. The medical examiner said that if she'd been walking around for hours, the alcohol could have metabolized. Signs of dehydration and starvation were found, and no indications of foul play. Selena's death was ruled as accidental as a result of hypothermia.
Ding, 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 ding.
After this ruling, there was no further investigation. The deputy sheriff at the time, now this is the undersheriff that we were talking about earlier, Eric Winburn. I don't think I can roll my eyes enough. I don't think that I can do it.
No.
He said that Selena's mother should have been charged for taking her daughter to the party where alcohol was present, that the driver of the van should have been charged for abandoning Selena. And he stated that if the facts didn't fit the family's narrative, then the family did not want to know about it. He also said in Murder at Bighorn that because the family, the aunt specifically, was very, very vocal about this case on local media, national media even maybe. And he said they were hindering the case by doing that. He asked her to be quiet. She said no. And the thing is, they just wanted their 15 minutes of fame. That's all they cared about. That's what they wanted. They didn't want to hear any facts.
Right. What a great opportunity for us to get in the media.
Yeah. I was really hoping for a tragedy like this so I could be on the fucking news.
They've lost somebody who is more important to them than life itself, it sounds like. But yeah, let's take this opportunity. Great opportunity to get on the news.
After Winburn resigned, someone unexpected was appointed as the deputy sheriff. Leroy Not Afraid, Selena's father. Leroy had full custody of Selena at one point, and she had recently made allegations of sexual assault against him, and a protective order had been issued, requiring Leroy to stay away from Selena until she was 18 years old. Leroy said that the accusations were false, but the rest of Selena's family believed that she was abducted and that her body was disposed of in the field. And makes sense to me.
Yeah, but Bighorn Sheriff's Department is like, absolutely not. That's not true. Okay, so in
she
this
wandered
case,
out there.
Yeah. So in this case, then you can be like, okay, well then your search was bullshit because you had drones, you had dogs, you had all kinds of people. You're doing all these grid searches, and they're like, no, we did a great search.
Well, and what did they say? Because the I think Eric Winburn, he said she was found under some sagebrush. But her aunt, who saw the location of where the body was found, said, no, 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 no. She was out in the open.
Yeah.
You could see her from yards away.
Right. And it would just make sense that her body could have been placed there. But in one of his excuses for why that could not have happened was, well, that was a busy street and the rest stop had people at it. There's no way somebody would have seen it happen. No, not necessarily. We just covered a case where a woman was murdered in the parking lot of a busy shopping center and nobody saw that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, it's not necessarily true that nobody could see it.
No.
Just because it was a semi-busy area. Stuff happens in busy areas all the time, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just that complete refusal to say, yeah, well, that could, because you don't know what happened. So then why won't you say that could have happened?
Well, and the thing is, for me too, which to your point, is that people like Eric Winburn, he will say things with absolute conviction, like this is exactly what happened. You don't know that though. if somebody else has an idea or even something that has more evidence to support it, he's like, you're making shit up.
Mm-hmm.
This is do as I say, not as I do type of, because you don't have anything to support your theory, which it is. It's a theory. It's not even a theory. It's a fucking lie.
Well, but yeah, because none of this is real anyway. This is not a problem. This is a specific to Selena's family problem because they let her go to a party that she shouldn't have been able to go to.
And again, that is victim blaming too. To an extent, it's blaming the mom.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think that something should have happened to, how much did they question the people who were in the van?
Right, because that whole trip seems strange. Because she had literally just called and asked her mom to come pick her up. Why would she get in a van and go with somebody somewhere when she knew her mom was on the way?
Yeah.
Like
it sounds like an abduction to me.
Exactly. And you guys, you got to watch this documentary or look more into these cases, but we don't even have time to go over the fact that, all of the stuff with Leroy in the family and his behavior with his child and just, you got to see his reaction and his excuses and just, he's just yucky. And that's a conflict of interest like no other. I don't understand why he could then be pretty much in charge of that investigation.
No, absolutely. It's outrageously inappropriate. Yes. And unfortunately, I think we're going to have to break this up into two parts and finish our, this is where, part one is going to end.
Yeah, because we've still got several other cases to go through and
several other curse words to say.
Yes, we've not said enough curse words.
Fired up is not even enough.
It's not. So make sure you hang with us next week for part two. If you're a patron, you've got part two locked and loaded, ready to go. You can listen to it now. But if not, no worries. You can catch it next week.
Yes. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation.
Thanks for listening, and we will meet you back here next week.
Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud.
Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy. Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.